the boy crushed in its skull seconds after, to the delight of the crowd. A couple of his friends rushed him to celebrate and ask what he planned to do with his new experience points.
Yes,
said Catalan with a frown.
I wonder what that's about.
She had her suspicions, but she couldn't share them with Pris. Last time the undead plague had surfaced in Undercity, it had been during Nikolai's ritual to raise Torst as a wraith.
Maybe he's finally making his move,
she thought. The excess of necromantic energy was as good a warning as she was going to get. Back in one of her hideouts, she had a small coffer with several aureas and a few treasury notes, enough to buy passage on a ship to Plekth and live on the leftovers until she was established there. She had heard that Ul-Balaz was beautiful this time of the year. The sand of its beaches was white like snow, and the sea was azure, purer than the most powerful cleric could achieve in a lifetime. A pair of zombies shambled near an alleyway. The passers-by ignored them, since there wasn't any brave youngster around who could benefit from the low-risk encounter. If enough zombies stumbled together, though, it could get dangerous. And then it would be a job for the Watch, since few in Undercity would dare risk their lives for others when they could simply walk briskly around the danger. Not that Catalan was judging. She and Pris ignored the zombies, too.
Maybe I should get out of town for a while,
she thought. Edward was a good guy and all, but he was a dungeon lord, and a dungeon lord's presence, despite his best intentions, heralded nothing good for Undercity, even if Nikolai and the Wraith went away. Catalan sighed and brushed a curl of hair off her forehead.
This isn't a job for a thief,
she thought.
Wetlands, this isn't a job for me at all. A hero should handle Nikolai. What am I supposed to do, steal his bad intentions away from him?
Yes, Plekth was so nice this time of the year. And she knew there were a couple nice merchant ships stationed in port today, about to leave for the Golden Continent. A skeleton crawled out of a ditch almost directly in front of Catalan. It was missing its entire lower half. Someone had fought it, but didn't care to finish the job. Pris scowled and kicked its skull off. The bone glinted in midair for an instant and then disappeared into a pile of horse dung, and the torso crawled blindly in the direction of the dung.
Who am I kidding?
Catalan thought.
I only want to get away from Torst. Ah, damn it, what a sad sight I'd make. Catalan, running away from danger. What would everyone say? I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I ran.
She gave a sad sigh. Plekth would have been nice.
What's that about?
Pris asked with evil glee.
You? Sighing longingly?
She inched closer to Catalan and whispered in her ear.
It's because of a man, isn't it, Cat?
What?
Catalan snapped, a bit too fast and defensively.
No, that's not what I was thinking.
It was too late. She had flinched. Since Pris had taken her by surprise, she had overreacted just a bit much, and she knew her friend would take that as evidence.
You know, some saw you and that adventurer head upstairs last night,
Pris told her, still grinning.
No, I mean, yes, but that has nothing to do with—
Aw, Cat.
Pris chuckled and ignored the other's complaints. She showed Catalan her open palms and shrugged.
Look, I'm not judging your taste in partners. I'm just saying, I'm sensing a pattern, you know?
Now it was getting a bit grating. Catalan crossed her arms.
What do you mean? A dangerous adventurer from God's nowhere, who, after a single day in Undercity, is already trying to become the next black market baron? Not fair at all. Ed's very sweet. It just so happens that he gives off that vibe.
Sure, feign ignorance.
Pris counted with her fingers.
Let's see. That necromancer from Galtia that pretended to be a detective? He was a detective. It just so happens that he can speak with the dead. Don't go around calling him a necromancer. People get killed for less.
Another finger.
Barontis Earl Varnor.
Pris coughed and mangled the name's pronunciation.
Whatever. The barbarian guy? The one with all the shrunken heads hanging from his loincloth? Brontus is a great guy. I want to get to know him.
Catalan could feel her face burning beet red. She eyed the street in search for an escape. Even a zombie would have been welcome.
Didn't he bathe in the blood of his enemies?
Pris pressed on.
I'm sure he was just boasting to impress me. Whatever.
Pris laughed and threw her hands in the air.
You see what I'm talking about. Adventurers, necromancers, barbarians. Soon enough, you'll end up dating a dungeon lord. Then all hell will break loose.
Luckily, Catalin was an expert card player. She gave her friend a horrified look, made Alita's sign with her hand, and stole a glance around to confirm that no overzealous inquisitor had overheard. Then she spotted her salvation, a faint dot close to her feet, small and covered in dust. A few less ranks in perception and she would have missed it. She darted in its direction.
"Where are you going, you coward?"
Pris called after her.
"Look, a horned spiderling,"
Catalin said. She rescued it an instant before a looming bird dove in their direction. The bird gave a dejected screech and flew away as the spiderling hid in Catalin's hands.
Are you fucking holding it?"
Pris asked with a horrified expression. Catalin shushed her friend. The spiderling was very weak and hurt. It was missing a leg and seemed to be on the brink of exhaustion. Even then, it pinched Catalin's skin softly with its mandibles, though without hurting her. It was trying to tell her something.
"Get rid of that thing! People will think you're insane!"
Pris urged her. Catalin ignored her.
"You're Red Spy, aren't you?"
she asked the critter.
"You missed him by a few hours. Do you need help to reach the forest?"
The spiderling trembled and bit her a bit harder, enough to sting.
"Scratch that,"
Pris went on.
"You are actually insane. You're talking to a forest critter while it's trying to eat you. Hang on a second,"
Catalin told her. She held the spiderling carefully in one of her hands and raised it so Pris could take a good look.
"See? It's trying to tell me something. I think it wants me to follow it."
What else could it want? It was almost jumping away from her hand, doing its best to get her to move in a direction east of the port.
"Are you under the influence of a control spell?"
Pris asked.
"Hang in there. Let me fetch a guild spellcaster."
"You don't understand,"
Catalin told her.
"This is Ed's spiderling. The adventurer? He used it to spy on Brondon. I think it may have found his hideout."
Pris cursed and stared at Catalin in disbelief. She opened her mouth to speak, thought it better, then said,
"Better reason to go to the guild, right? Perhaps I should,"
Catalin thought. The spiderling urged her forward with unmistakable urgency. Whatever was going on, it was going on right the fuck now. But even then, she wasn't a hero. She was a thief, and this wasn't her job. The only thing that could be expected out of her was to buy a one-way ticket to Ul-Balaz.
"You go do that,"
Catalin said, shaking her head. She could almost see that Plexian merchant ship sailing further and further away.
"I am not letting that asshole escape."
And she set off running without waiting for an answer. Chapter 21. Never Tempt Fate. A couple hours later, they exited the tunnel and were treated to the view of the valley, partially covered with snowbanks about 2 inches high. The nearby treetops were a mixture of green and pristine white, and Ed could see the glistening ice where puddles had been a couple days ago. He shuddered and closed his coat.
"It's going to be a pain coming and going from Undercity to the haunt when the snow gets more intense,"
Alder pointed out as they walked.
"Nothing the drones can't handle," Ed pointed out. "If necessary, I'll have them clear a path by eating the snow. Hell, I bet we could make sleds for the barrels and have drones pull them."
"Drones pulling sleds? You know what? That's the most lordly idea I've heard in a long time," Alder said with a laugh. "I can picture it now. You clad in dark, full plate armor, green cloak hovering in the wind, riding your black sled, spewing eldritch flames."
"That's ridiculous,"
Kes pointed out.
"I love it," Ed said.
Instead of black armor, though, he pictured it red. Did Ivalice have anything like reindeer around? Now that they were out of the boundaries of Undercity, it was Ed's favorite time to figure out what new talents he could buy with his increased skill points. He had 2 new talent options, both belonging to his Dungeon Lord advancement tree. They were unlocked due to his new melee skill and to his increased endurance. Pledge of Bloodshed, 50 experience. Any weapon that the Dungeon Lord wields is treated as a magical weapon. It does damage as if the Lord were using a minor power strike, untalented, with each hit. This bonus stacks with the Power Strike talent and with damage-enhancing spells like Eldritch Edge. Restriction? Selecting this talent locks out the Pledge of Armor advancement option. Energy cost? Passive. Pledge of Armor. 50 experience. Any armor that the Dungeon Lord wears is considered magical, as if it had a minor protection enchantment. This bonus stacks with any protection enchantment the armor may have, or any other similar defensive enchantment. Magical armor can deflect spells of similar power category, as well as normal weaponry. Restriction? Selecting this talent locks out the Pledge of Bloodshed advancement option. Energy cost? Passive. Both have huge experience costs, Ed thought. He could afford it, with his pool of 80, but it worried him to see the costs increase as his total experience grew. It meant he wouldn't be able to return to old talents later on and cheaply improve his strength. He had to be extra careful with his choices. On the other hand, both are passive, with no energy cost. That's a huge bonus. As far as I've seen, normal classes don't get much in the way of passive talents, at least at this level. Like with his aura, he could only choose one of these, and he was partial to the aggressive one. A permanent magical weapon that stacked with Eldritch Edge? That would allow him to put out a hurting during a fight.
I'm buying spell casting with mine, Alder muttered, while Ed read the talent's descriptions.
Didn't you have that already?
Kes asked.
Those are my bardic utterances, Alder explained. Different thing. Some bards never bother learning magic and focus all their talents on improving their utterances. But I learned a thing or two from Levy and... well, I'm a bit tired of being useless in combat.
His eyes went out of focus as he made the purchase, and, without warning, the bard fell to the snowy ground and convulsed. Kes let out a surprised yell and rushed to the bard.
Ed!
She called.
What the hell is going on?
Don't worry, Ed said hurriedly as he helped her support the bard. It's a thing that happens when you buy spellcasting. You have a quick mystical trip. It's kind of fun, he assured her. I wonder what he's seeing.
Soon enough, Alder recovered.
Ah!
The bard said.
Sorry, I forgot to warn you about that kiss.
What did you see?
Ed asked him.
It was so very weird, Alder told him with a smile. And it's hard to explain. I was a bard, the leader of a troop. But it was another world, and everything looked so different. I was playing for thousands of people, Ed, like so many humans together, clad in black.
He scratched his chin.
Must have been some kind of apocalyptic cult. In any case, everyone was cheering for my troop to arrive to the stage, and when we did,
he made a whooshing sound.
Fire everywhere! I thought we were under attack, but it was just an illusion. I used a magical guitar and sang something about puppets, and the crowd went batshit insane.
The bard had a dreamy expression on his face.
I'd give anything for something like that to happen for real.
Ed couldn't help but grin.
You know, there's nothing stopping you. Black robes come with the dark package, right?
That's insane,
Alder whispered. But Ed could see the idea taking root in the bard's mind. Kes shook her head.
So this is why people advise against having bards for company. Insanity follows.
She stared at Ed's talents.
Those two pack a punch, all right. No reason to wait until later. Which one are you planning to get?
Pledge of Bloodshed sounds neat, Ed said, and then explained his reasoning.
You should get the armor one,
Kes said when he was done.
Why?
Remember the fight against Karmic and the others? Even though we won, we didn't come out unscathed. They were thieves, not fighters, and yet even Karmic landed a couple of hits with his dagger.
She showed them the spot in her armor where a long gash was carved in. Now that Ed looked at Kes's armor closely, it was actually nicked and scored in dozens of spots.
The reality of combat is, it's ugly. No matter how good you are, eventually you'll get hurt, and a single wound can maim you for life.
Ed recalled the sickening crunch of Karmic's ribs as Kes caught him with her power strike.
Good point.
Destroying the Dungeon Lord's enemies is the job of your minions. That's us, Ed. We are your army. A soldier can be replaced.
She gestured severely to shut up Ed and Alder's protests.
But without the general, an army will collapse.
Without you to power the haunt, it isn't anything but pretty rocks. And if you get killed by a random arrow, then the rest of us will die soon afterward. Just like what happened with Kale Arpadel.
At the mention of his predecessor, Ed lowered his hands. Kess is right. Most of the Arpadel minions had been hunted down and killed as they tried to leave Starevos. Only Alder and Levy had survived.
I couldn't do that to them. Make them relive that again?
Very well, Kess, you win, he said. Pledge of armor it is.
He'd have to do with silver and holy blessings instead of the magical effects of Pledge of Bloodshed. A flash of his evil eye, and he was 50 experience points lighter, and in the possession of a powerful new talent.
Any difference? Alder asked him. It should be active now, right? With your leather armor?
Dunno. Ed shrugged. I feel the same as always.
That's because it's a passive talent,
Kess said. Without warning, she threw a light punch at Ed's chest. It had been a solid hit, but it somehow felt as if it had merely glanced off.
See? There it is, all right,
Kess said.
I was hoping for something flashier, said Ed.
If you want magical sparks, just wait until you get hit for real.
In that case, I'm good without sparks for the time being.
During the return trip, they met with a small group of spider warriors that patrolled the nearby area of the forest. Ed returned his remaining spiderling to them. While the spider warriors escorted Ed and the others to the haunt, they gave news from the 2 days of absence, chattering in their snapping voices. Queen Laurel's War of Conquest was going well. A rival queen was dead, and another had sworn loyalty to the haunt, and to Laurel, who was now recovering from her wounds inside her nest. Winter and snow had forced a ceasefire to the fighting, since the bigger horned spiders hibernated during the winter, leaving the protection of their nests to the spiderlings, most of which died due to the cold and the predators anyway. Kaga and his other Kaftar waited for Ed at the haunt. The spider warriors reported that the Kaftar seemed pleased with the experience points they had earned during the fighting, but were eager to receive their due wage. Ed had the money, but knew he would have to convince them to wait on the second part of the deal. He hadn't found a martial master to train them yet. If they didn't agree to wait a bit more, the haunt would be left more vulnerable, but at least Ed could use the extra money on runes and silver weaponry. Perhaps some spell scrolls for Levy to learn new magic, which she sorely needed.
What about the new queen? Ed asked the spider warriors, the one now serving Queen Laurel.
The spider warriors exchanged worried, confused glances, as if deciding what they could tell Ed. He realized with dismay that he was accustomed enough to horned spiders that he could read their body language.
It remains to be seen,
the bigger warrior said.
If Queen Celina will keep her part of the deal. Her cluster took heavy damage during the fight, and she was defiant to the very end. She probably agreed to the pact only because it will give her cluster time to replenish in strength. After that...
Ed nodded. It wasn't anything he hadn't expected. For his spider empire plan to work, Laurel would need to conquer many clusters, not just one, so a single queen wouldn't feel tempted to break the pact and attempt a coup. Of course, having to deal with many subordinate queens meant that Laurel would have to learn a new kind of politics very, very fast.
What about Queen Celina's cluster? Ed asked. How do you feel about them?
Another key ingredient of his plan was to have the different clusters learn to cooperate with each other.
They lost, said the warrior plainly. So they're weaker than us. They should be food. To let them live and give them a place, even a subordinate one, in our chain of command. It feels wrong, my lord. Forgive me for my candidness, but we've heard you encourage your minions to speak their mind. This alliance isn't natural.
Natural isn't always what's best, Ed thought. Thanks for your opinion, he told the warrior. I'll keep it in mind.
He made a mental note not to have the clusters work closely together for a while. He'd have to sort it out with Laurel after winter was over. The spiders left shortly thereafter as Ed and the others reached the outskirts of the haunt's encampment. Kess frowned nervously to herself as they went.
Is anything wrong? Ed asked.
She raised a hand to ask for silence, then listened, her face a mask of concentration as her gaze scrutinized the shrubbery. Ed lowered his hand until he found the hilt of his short sword.
Just the wind,
Kes said. Alder let out a loud sigh. He had been holding his breath.
I thought something was following us, but it's clearly my nerves.
Ed nodded, smiled, then his eyes flashed green for an instant, and four drones went running to the section where Kes had been looking. They searched the place, turning and uprooting bushes and small vegetation. But there was nothing there.
What did I just say?
Kes asked, peeved, as Ed dismissed the drones.
Better safe than sorry, he told her. I guess my nerves are a bit on edge too, Kes.
As Ed and the others neared the haunt's entrance, he sent a drone to gather the dungeon's inhabitants. Someone waited for him at the entrance, though, a hunched humanoid figure covered in coarse fur.
Kaga, Ed said when they reached the Kaftar. Long time no see.
Indeed, Lord Wright, said Kaga with that raspy voice of his. As you can see, the quest you demanded of my cackle is moving along nicely.
He stood as tall as he could, which wasn't easy given that all Kaftar were naturally hunchbacks.
Kes,
Alder whispered.
Is that what I think it is?
He jabbed a finger in the direction of the Kaftar. Kaga was wearing a new armor, which was black and had a thick, ridged surface. Ed had to do a double take before he realized the armor was fashioned out of a horned spider's exoskeleton. The Kaftar had made a pair of daggers out of the fangs, and even a shield out of the spider face, horn still attached.
I kinda want one,
Kes whispered back to Alder.
So that's what happened to the queen that Laurel and Kaga killed. Is Laurel okay with you wearing that? Ed asked aloud.
The Kaftar shrugged.
You know horned spiders. As long as it wasn't their queen I killed, they don't give a wet damn.
He barked a shrill laugh, then smacked his palm against the shield, which made a dull, solid noise.
Very good material, spider chitin. Lighter than iron, but sturdier than leather.
The Kaftar scratched the fur under his snout, picked a flea, and ate it.
If you want, Lord Wright, I can ask Yumiya to fashion one for you. After, of course, we finish our contract.
Ed winced and flashed the Kaftar his most charming smile.
Yes, he said. About that.
You are satisfied with our performance, yes?
Kaga inquired with a saccharine tone, which implied Ed was treading dangerous waters.
We've done everything you asked of us. It's time for our conditions to be fulfilled.
That's right, Ed said.
He gave Kaga the bag with the 60 vifaras.
Here's the first month's payment for a squad of 5.
Kaga raised an eyebrow.
Only 5?
He took out a vifara and bit the triangular coin, which remained unaffected. This seemed to satisfy him.
All I can afford right now, Ed said. Also, we have your special training center built. We'll furnish it with weapons soon enough. There is only one problem. Your teacher? We haven't found him yet.
The Kaftar made a canine grunt.
No martial artist? That's the most important part of our deal, Lord Wright.
I know, Ed said gravely, and I give you my word I'll get you one. But right now, there's pressing matters I must attend to. Life or death.
He looked at the Kaftar in his yellowish eyes.
If having to wait a month, a fully paid one, for your trainer is a deal-breaker, please decide on that soon.
He knew that the Kaftar cackle would be an important source of his dungeon's military strength, but he also couldn't focus on finding the martial expert with the threat of Nikolai looming around. Kaga sighed.
I'll have to discuss the matter with my cackle. Suffice it to say, they won't be happy. But perhaps I can convince them. The experience we got for dealing with the spiders has my warriors very excited to work with you.
If it helps,
Kes told the Kaftar while Ed and Alder ventured inside the dungeon.
I can train with your warriors during the first month. At least it'll keep your skills sharp. I'm no pushover.
Looking over his shoulder, Ed caught a respectful nod from the Kaftar. 3 people waited for him past the haunt's entrance. Andrina, Zachary, and Yorche. Ed noticed that the defensive spears placed around the tunnels now sported iron tips. Yorche nodded proudly when he caught Ed looking.
I had some free time during your absence, Edward. Glad to see that,
Ed told him with a smile, then handed him the bag with the silver dust. Here's another project, he said as the blacksmith examined the contents. I fear we're going to need silver weapons fairly soon.
There's about a half a kilo of dust in here, right?
Yorche asked. He pursed his lips.
It won't be enough. I know,
Ed said. Then he searched his belt's pockets and took out the 3 smoke bombs he had looted from Karmic. He explained to Yorche what they were.
There's an explosive powder inside them, Ed said. If you could tinker, very carefully, with it, add some silver dust to the mix.
Yorche flashed an interested smile.
I see. Stepping into a cloud infused with silver could be unpleasant for any undead.
He examined the bombs.
It should be an easy modification. Hell, I'll make the prototypes right now, if there isn't anything else you want to discuss.
Ed shook his head, and the blacksmith headed for his forge. As he left, Andrina stepped up, cheerful as always. She was carrying a tray filled with about 2 dozen tin flasks.
I've had some free time too, Ed. The Batblins are getting the hang of the brewing business. I finally convinced them to stop bathing in the mix barrels.
She took 3 flasks out and handed 1 each to Ed, Alder, and Kess.
Check it out! The first batch of mass-produced vitality potions. They're very low power, of course, but I'm close to earning enough skill ranks to brew more potent mixtures soon.
She beamed with pride. Alder rotated his flask a couple of times and sniffed its contents. Maybe to search for any scent of Batblins.
I'm going to need a couple of these after Kess's training sessions, he said.
Nonsense,
Kess told him sternly.
No trainee of mine is going to depend on performance enhancing magic.
She glowered at the bard until he sighed and put the flask down. After Andrina, it was Zachary's turn. The priest shuffled toward Ed with a self-satisfied grin. In the month he had been living in the haunt, the man had managed to put on some weight, in almost direct defiance of the laws of thermodynamics and common sense.
As you can see, Barova's finest have been hard at work since you left, Zachary said. They are inspired by the good work of Alita's most humble servant, me.
He gave a curtsy.
Now that everyone knows of your honest intention in siding with the pious and the faithful, they're motivated to follow in your footsteps.
Ed wanted to point at the villagers outside. Their attitudes toward the haunt were still unchanged. After all, despite his pompousness, Zachary probably thought he was actually helping.
Thanks, Zachary. How did the holy water turn out? Did you run into any problems?
Zachary stroked his trimmed beard.
It's the strangest thing. Even accounting for the unholy emanations natural of a dungeon, I've been having a hard time performing the blessing ritual.
He frowned.
It's like something is running interference near my chapel.
He shrugged and patted his tunic until he found a crystal vial filled with water.
Still, thanks to the power of my faith, I've managed to succeed. This vial will last you a couple days. I've a bit more holy water in reserve, in case any villagers want me to bless their food.
As Ed handled the vial, a shot of cold pain, like being stabbed with a long needle, extended through his palm and up his arm. A sense of dread enveloped his body. It was like an invisible hand was enclosing around his heart. Ed winced and placed the vial in one of his belt's pockets. Everything went back to normal.
So, Alita doesn't care about good intentions after all.
Are you all right? Alder asked him. You went pale all of a sudden.
Zachary studied him with a blank expression.
I'm just tired from the trip, Ed said with a dismissive wave of his hand.
To change the subject, he took out Karmic's throwing knives and handed them to Zachary, still in their leather straps.
Could you try your hand at blessing these?
He wanted the priest to experiment with a small knife first, just in case something went wrong and the weapon was ruined because of being blessed inside a dungeon. The priest took his leave. Ed started on the path to the mess hall to eat dinner, but then Levy and Kleck arrived together.
There you are,
the witch said as a manner of greeting. She grinned at Alder and Kess.
Glad to see Undercity spat you out in the end.
Trust me, Alder said with a shiver. It was a close call. You wouldn't believe how many times we risked our lives in only 2 days.
You traveled with Ed,
Levy said.
So I doubt I'll be surprised. You can tell me all about it during dinner, yes?
I'm not surprised you 3 are safe, Kleck said.
The Batblin carried a small bag in his hands, and he moved very carefully with it, as if it were full of fragile crystal.
With Lord Ed and Kess around, there was nothing to be scared of.
Kess coughed politely and lifted a hand to cover her face. Ed caught a glimpse of a blush.
You won't get me to go easy on you during training by sweet-talking me, Cleck,
the mercenary said.
Maybe this will,
said Levy. She carefully took the bag out of Cleck's hands, opened it, and produced a polished gray rock. It had a purple glyph engraved on it, a sign unfamiliar to Ed.
A rune, of sorts. I lack the materials to make a decent one, so the magic only lasts a couple days before fading off. But my skill ranks increase all the same, so I consider it practice.
She handed the rock over for Ed to examine. The engraving seemed fainter than the blue glyphs of the normal runes he had used in the past, but the magic was there, nonetheless.
It has a charge of witch spray,
Levy explained.
There's also two runes with crow familiar in them.
Great, said Ed.
He gave Levy a happy smile.
You're improving really fast, aren't you?
Of course. That's my incredible talent at work.
She cackled, only a tad madly.
Keep throwing resources my way, and I'll keep feeding arcane might to the haunt.
She and the others headed out to the mess hall, where the drones were hard at work serving dinner. Ed remained behind for a moment, so he could take mental measure of the resources of the haunt. His evil eye blazed for a minute as he summoned the magical data of his dungeon. The Wraith's Haunt. Dungeon Lord, Edward Wright. Drones, 30. Dominant Material, Cave Rock. Threat, 60. Local. Represents how aware the outside world is of the dungeon and how willing-slash-able-slash-ready they are to do something about it. A 100 indicates imminent destruction. Offense, 2,500. A representation of the strength a dungeon's forces can muster during an attack, raid, or invasion, outside the dungeon itself. It represents the experience they would award, as a group, if they were defeated, but not absorbed. Defense, 3,500. The experience the population of a dungeon would award if they were to be defeated, but not absorbed, during the defense of said dungeon. It's multiplied by a percentage given by the dungeon's upgrades and defenses. Magic generated? 10. Measures the magic created by the sacred grounds that can be put to use in different endeavors or to power dungeon upgrades. Magic consumed? 1. Measures how much magic is consumed. Population. 57 humans. 3 combatants. 1 avian combatant. 124 batblins. 26 batblin combatants. Spider clusters. 1 empress. 1 queen. 5 princesses. 23 warriors. Spiderlings? Unknown. 5 elite Kafdar hunters. In process. Areas. Living zones. 5 living quarters. 3 storage. 1 campsite. 1 mess hall. Military facilities. 1 Batblin camp. Hidden. 1 training facility. 2 spider dens. Hidden. 1 Kafdar habitat. Research installations. 1 witchcraft laboratory. Upgraded, library. 1 herbalist workshop. Sacred grounds. The seat. 1 light altar. 1 dark altar. Production. 1 forge. 1 brewery. 3 hell chicken farms. 1 kitchen. 1 mining facility. Defense. Small dust traps. Defensive spears. Batblin sentries. Spider sentries. Avian mercenary. Dungeon upgrades. Internal heating.
So much has changed since I first arrived here, Ed thought.
Back then, he, Levy, and Alder had had to sleep in tents by the dungeon's entrance, shivering from the cold, and vulnerable to the attacks of horned spiders and the creatures of the forest. They had been hungry, weak, scared, and barely able to cast 4 spells per day between the 3 of them. From those pitiful days, an entire community had arisen. If only it hadn't taken the Mind Brood attack for it to happen.
If Ione had waited a month before he attacked, then we could have stopped him easily, Ed decided. Barova would still be standing. Innocent lives would have been saved.
If the haunt was all that stood between the innocent and the Iones and Nikolais of the world, there was no time to lose.
We must become strong to the point where there's nothing we can't face. The only thing he needed was time. Let his enemies wait and lurk in the dark. The dungeon would grow and hunger in the meantime. He headed for the mess hall, but as he did so, the sound of hurried footsteps coming his way claimed his attention. He turned back. A Batblin was running his way.
Lord Wraith!
The critter shrieked.
Lord Wraith! We need you outside!
Ed felt like he had been suddenly doused with freezing water. He recalled Alder's words. Whatever you do, don't tempt fate. What's wrong? He asked. The Batblin's eyes were wide with excitement.
It's the prisoner, sir!
He jabbed a finger in the direction of the campsite, at the glimpse of purple sky which was quickly growing darker.
They're trying to escape!
Chapter 22. Like Thieves in the Night.
They're trying to escape!
Rollum's roar thundered through the clearing like an explosion. Nikolai rolled his eyes. It was lucky he had chosen a spot far enough from Wright's dungeon, otherwise his friend's recklessness would have given them away before those damned horned spiders.
Don't let them reach the trees!
Someone snapped. Arrows and magical bolts surged through the air in the general direction of the three spider warriors, which were dashing toward the dungeon's outskirts as fast as they could. Most of the bolts missed, but enough found their mark. One of the spiders stumbled as a firebolt caught her on her haunches and punched through the chitin, sending strings of blue goo flying in all directions. The spider let out a screech, lost her footing, slid as her legs buckled under her, and blundered through the rocky terrain, leaving bits of exoskeleton in her path. Another spider warrior got caught by two arrows in her upper body section, the part where most of her vital organs were located. A spasm shook her entire body, and she tried to keep running, but her body had lost all coordination, and an ice bolt punched through one of her eyes. Blue mucus ebbed out of her mouth as her mandibles pinched at the air. Rollum caught the third seconds after the last of the projectiles landed. The burly man could be surprisingly fast, and he had come out of the portal ready for a fight, unlike the spiders, who had been caught by surprise. He grabbed the spider by her leg and stopped her dead in her tracks. The leg bent and broke, and the spider turned, screaming in pain, and tried to stab her fangs into Rollum's underside. The man lifted his mailed arm, and the fangs broke around them. Without so much as a change in his expression, Rollum raised a fist clad in a metallic gauntlet and brought it down with brutal strength right over the spider's eyes. There was a crunch, then a wet splat. The skull of the spider caved under the hit, and her eyes exploded out of their sockets at the same time brain matter oozed out of her spasming mouth and marred the snow beneath. A young boy, no older than 14, flinched and turned away at the sight, covering his mouth with his red cape. Nikolai glanced at Rollum one last time, to confirm there weren't any more spider warriors around, then turned to the kid and patted him on the shoulder.
Easy there, Peter.
Peter's eyes widened in surprise at the sight of Nikolai, and he fought for control as he heaved.
Sorry, sir. I don't know what came over me.
Disgust is natural, Nikolai assured him. Take a minute. Don't worry. It'll get easier. In time.
He left Peter and hurried to Brandon. The trip through the portal had weighed heavily on the elf. He was even more ashen than usual and had spent the brief fight with the spiders puking.
Scrolls, Nikolai told him, his voice cold. Peter is just a kid. It's understandable that the sight of brutality sits badly on him. But you? You are a man. There's no excuse.
He spat at Brandon's feet. The elf raised his head, grimaced, and used his sleeve to clean his lips.
Here, Nikolai.
He rummaged through his pockets and handed the rebel a pair of scrolls. Scrolls, unlike runes, served to cast complex spells that required more input than simply aiming at something and saying a trigger word. These had been made by Manfred, and Nikolai activated them in a hurry. Normally, handling the scrolls would have been Lindis's job. She was the spellcaster, after all, and she could have gotten more out of them than Nikolai. But Lindis wasn't here, and the other spellcasters were busy near the portal, spraying a semicircle of salt behind it. A wave of magical energy surrounded his body. He could feel the parasite stir, and flowed into his mind. Information followed soon afterward, a vague knowledge of his surroundings, both of geography and of the forest's inhabitants.
he saw his rebels, with himself at the center, a blue blob in the middle of the clearing. In front of them stood the dense forest, a thick growth of shrubbery that hid a group of spiderlings, tiny red dots, running away from the clearing.
There,
Nikolai ordered, jabbing a finger in the air.
Fireballs, on my mark!
Marius, Lancel, and Poira ran in front of him, took to their knees, and aimed a fireball rune each. Nikolai waited for the spiderlings to leave the faint protection of a tree trunk. He couldn't afford to let even one escape, not if he wanted to retain the element of surprise.
Now!
The fireballs shot at the same time. Their aim was true. Although the divination spell was fading, Nikolai could see the dots disappear as the simultaneous explosions shook the ground and a rain of broken branches and dirt showered the forest. Nikolai headed for Marius and handed him the last scroll.
There are a few individual spiderlings left. Grab two men and hunt them down. They can't move as fast as we can. Don't let them get away.
Marius nodded, grim as always, and did as he was told. Lancel went with him. Poira remained behind. She had to help with the salt circle.
You think they heard the explosions?
She asked.
Honestly? I've no idea, Nikolai told her. If they did, they did.
It wouldn't be ideal, but soon, the dungeon would have something else to worry about. Behind them, the portal cracked with arcane energy. Purple lines blazed across the snow, melting it to reveal the grass below and marring the green with smoldering black.
It's coming through!
Someone yelled, somewhat unnecessarily.
Roll him! Get back!
Nikolai exclaimed. His friend was busy kicking the brains out of one of the wounded spider warriors. If the wraith came through... Rolla may have had a temper, but he thankfully wasn't an idiot. He heard the warning, took a look at the portal, then ran to Nikolai, who was just now taking his spot behind the circle of salt, next to Brandon and Peter. The scent of decay and rotten flesh seeped through the portal. A purple line cracked the salt line, breaking it. One rebel hurried to replace it, risking his life in the process. Nikolai made a mental note to reward that man later, if they survived. First came the specters, dark shadows, black against the purple of the sky. They retained the shape they had had in life, but little else. No features, no eyes, only blank expressions and that constant, maddening humming. They poured out of the portal, a few at first, then more followed. Nikolai knew exactly how many there were. One for each prisoner he'd had remaining. 30 of them. 30 beggars. 30 nobodies, foreigners to Storavos that now served, in death, a better purpose than they could have ever dreamed of in life. The shades floated around the clearing, ignoring the line of rebels just a few steps behind the portal. Nobody dared speak. Not even Nikolai. Although sound would have made little difference. That was the beauty of it. Undead had no noses, no eyes, no ears. Whatever they used to hunt after the living, it shared little in common with normal senses. Salt did the trick. With the line of salt between the rebels and the undead, it was as if the world behind the specters didn't exist. Of course, had an intelligent undead been around, a vampire or a mummy, it would have known that something was wrong. The sight of a blob of darkness in the middle of an otherwise well-lit garden was suspicious even if you couldn't see inside. An intelligent undead, perhaps, would have realized the trick and figured out a way to break the salt line. Neither the specters nor the wraith were smart enough, so they headed in the only direction in which they could sense life. They headed for Marius and the other two men that Nikolai had sent to deal with the spiderlings. The same direction as the dungeon. A skeletal, translucent hand clad in a black, tattered tunic came out of the portal. The humming of the specters intensified as the wraith poured forth into Hoya. Whispers of dread spread through the rebels when a powerful aura of magical fear reached them. A few of them broke off and ran away, only to stop some strides later, out of range. They turned back, pale and sweaty, as the wraith of Torst headed into the forest. The wraith didn't even look back once. Let the Heligians stand by their gods and their rituals, their holy water and their blessed weapons. A clever Starovosian with access to some salt could outsmart them all.
Good luck, Marius, Nikolai thought, clenching his fist.
If Marius were smart, he'd lead the others out of the way of the undead. If he wasn't...
Then you'll be remembered, my friend. Your sacrifice won't be in vain. We move!
he said aloud, once he judged the undead were far enough from the clearing.
Time to let Dungeon Lord Wright know he isn't welcome in Storevos.
The place was empty, yet trapped. They removed two ice bolt runes guarding the entrance, and a couple explosive trap glyphs carelessly engraved next to a stall. As they delved farther into the warehouse, the stench of death and decay intensified. They could hear the faint song of the undead now, a constant humming and throbbing all around them.
They're watching us,
Catalan whispered, staring left and right at nothing in particular. The spirits of the dead were barely out of reach. If the barrier of reality became just slightly thinner, how many would pour in, eager to drink the warmth out of living veins?
Let them watch then, as long as they stay away,
Pris said. The thief shivered behind her mask of bravado. Catalan stopped. Something nagged at the back of her mind, but she couldn't figure out what. She activated her perception talent, and the fine details of the world around her gained a new definition, like someone had infused them with a faint golden aura and highlighted all the important clues that she otherwise might have missed.
Our cultist friends were here,
Catalan said, staring at the vague outline of fingerprints and footprints spread all over the dusty floor. How could she have missed them before?
Left recently, though.
The footprints, the ones that weren't broken by others stepping atop them, went only inside the next chamber, and the exits weren't in that direction. Necromantic energy, people that disappeared out of a warehouse, the spirits of the dead hammering at the fabric of reality.
There's an active portal here,
Catalan whispered.
And someone is alive over there.
She deactivated the talent just before the throbbing behind her eyes developed into a migraine.
How do you know?
Pris asked, while she disabled the traps around the entrance.
I heard someone sobbing,
Catalan said, then shrugged. It was now impossible to distinguish the faint noise from the ghastly humming.
Pris? Yes,
Pris asked harshly. Her hands were trembling, and she couldn't stop glancing at the shadowy corners.
There are a lot of dead people back there,
Catalan said, trying to soothe her friend with her voice.
Save yourself the sight, will you? I can handle it from here.
Despite her fear, Pris managed to ask a faint,
Are you sure?
Catalan wasn't, but she knew she could withstand the trauma better than Pris. So she nodded.
Wait here for a minute. If I don't come back, return to the guild. We're going to have to pay a lot of money to the watch to keep this from reaching the Inquisition's ears, you know. Right,
Pris whispered.
If a dark portal is active in the city.
There was no need to finish that sentence. Catalan slipped inside the room, all her muscles tense, ready to dart away if she felt a rune trap being triggered. Despite having mentally prepared herself, a scream burst from her throat. She covered her mouth with her gloved hands. The portal hovered 100 feet in front of her, a wound in the fabric of reality. Faint now, almost closed. The magical circle that powered it was engraved in purple lines on the floor, and the ceiling was blackened and marred with soot, like a fire had broken out right under it. And the twisted, consumed gray bodies around the portal. Catalan caught a glimpse of naked skin, deformed, barely recognizable as human. She let out another muffled scream and averted her eyes.
Ghastly, isn't it?
A male's voice, detached, came from somewhere to her right. She turned, alarmed, angry at herself for not having noticed him. He was a mercenary caster. That much was clear from his flashy tunic, engraved with gold filigree, and the quartz hanging from a small silver chain around his neck, which identified him as a diviner with an advanced ranked spellcasting talent. He was slim and sickly, like he had lost a bunch of weight recently. His eyes had the vacuous stare of a heavy pixie dust user.
Who are you?
She asked as she made a show of drawing her dagger in one hand. With the other, discreetly, she unsheathed the throwing knife and left that arm hanging behind her waist, next to her buttock.
Does it matter?
The man said. He sighed and walked to the edge of the circle, close to one of the bodies.
Look at this. What has the world come to? It wasn't like this in my youth.
He caressed his forehead and winced.
It wasn't like this. Everything was much better back then. Less death, for instance. Wouldn't it be better if we could go back?
What happened here?
Catalan took a couple steps closer to the diviner, making sure not to look at the corpses near him.
My fault, the man said. All my fault. The strange thing is, I know I should care. I know I am damned. And yet...
He shrugged and kicked at the corpse. It looked like he had hit a wet rag.
I told him where to go, you know. Without my help, he wouldn't have found the dungeon.
Nikolai,
Catalan said.
He did this.
Not all of it. The Wraith killed most of the prisoners, drained all their endurance away. Oh, it happened so fast. At least they weren't scared for long, I think.
The Wraith? What's Torst doing here?
Nikolai couldn't control the Wraith, could he? Then, how had he gotten it inside the magic circle? She forced herself to look at the purple lines. She caught the sight of a deflated eye seeping out of its socket and clenched her teeth, trying not to puke. Despite her lack of specialized magical knowledge, she realized that she wasn't looking at a single circle. There was another, smaller, inside the first one. A summoning circle.
Isn't it obvious?
The diviner turned around and stared at her with his cold, sad eyes.
A clumsy magical display, yet effective. First, Nikolai made the portal, using the coordinates I gave him. After he went in, the few remaining rebels summoned the Wraith here, inside the circle. And it had nowhere else to go, you know? Couldn't leave the circle. So Wraith and Spectres all went into the portal eventually.
Torst had eaten the prisoners. So many of them, now transformed into Spectres under the Wraith's will. Hungry, dark shapes heading for Ed, and Alder, and Kes, and who knew how many others. Dark-aligned, yes, but good people.
Oh.
Catalan's shoulders hung limp as realization washed over her like a cold wave.
Dunghill.
Oh, shit, Ed muttered to himself as he ran after the Batblin. Have they gone mad? If the villagers really had tried to escape, they must have run into the spiders. And Ed knew that the critters weren't known for being soft and understanding.
Lord Wright?
Kaga matched his pace when Ed passed him by.
What's the commotion about? Are we in a fight?
There was just a tiny, hopeful edge to the question.
No, not yet,
Ed told the Kaftar. As he left the last rocky slope that hid the dungeon's entrance, he saw his fears come true. At least 10 web-covered humans slumped on the grass, fighting feverishly against the sticky strands that glued their bodies together. Princess Tulip was there, along with 3 spider warriors, their mandibles clicking angrily at the sound of the villagers' threats and pleading. Close to the spiders were the rest of the villagers, about 2 dozen of them, armed with farming equipment and other tools, out of which some had fashioned crude spears and blunt weaponry.
Stick them!
One of the villagers said.
There's more of us!
Yet no one was willing to make the first move. Ed had seen something similar once. The mob was trying to garner enough anger to override their fear. One of them saw Ed approach and pointed at him with a bony finger.
It's the Dungeon Lord!
The man exclaimed. Ed couldn't recall his name. The guy had had to remain a captive of the Haunt because he was a drunk who couldn't keep a secret to save his life. All the heads, including the spiders, turned to Ed. In what seemed like another lifetime, the attention may have terrified him. Right now, he was too busy to even notice.
May the light have mercy!
Another man. This one was a devout member of Alita's militant church.
By the wetlands, Brine, be a man and fight him,
said a woman with a half-closed eye. She had been left behind on Andrina's recommendation, on the grounds that the woman loved to spread rumors and start fights.
He's only one guy,
she goaded the farmer next to her. Ed's evil eye flared angrily, lighting the villagers' faces with eldritch green. Ed saw frightened people taken from their homes, but he also saw the dangerous glint of their improvised weaponry.
What the hell is going on?
He asked Princess Tulip. Tulip took a tentative step away from the standing villagers and pointed a hairy leg to the ones webbed to the ground.
A treacherous escape attempt, my lord,
she hissed with anger.
They waited for nightfall, when we changed patrols, and tried to make a break for it. It was only luck we caught them. A nearby Batblin patrol warned us. When we ordered them to lay down their weapons, they charged at us. Would have killed us had we not defended ourselves.
Ed turned to the villagers.
Is this true?
True, you ask?
Brian asked.
True? I'll tell you what's true. For a month now, your minions and you, right, have told us over and over again how you must keep us prisoners for our own sake. Such nonsense! We aren't blind, you know. You walk in the company of horned spiders and yet pretends to be on our side. The same spiders that killed Ione, the same ones that burned our village down. You've sweet-talked Kess the traitor, even Yorche and the others, but not us. No, I say, we know the likes of you, Dungeon Lord. We know that whatever you hold in store for us is nothing good. That's what's true, anyway.
Cold rage surged through Ed's veins.
Have you not listened to a word we've said? You know how the Inquisition works. Are you idiots trying to get everyone killed?
A wave of fear shook their faces. To Ed, it was nonsensical, another sign that the world had gone insane. There was no reason to be scared of him. He was just a guy. He realized his evil eye was still active. He closed his eyes and willed his temper to ease.
See?
Asked the woman in a whisper.
See? What did I tell you? Even now he threatens us.
Her eyes were wide, glinting with excitement.
Aye,
another woman said.
It's true.
She spat a brownish blob in front of her feet.
Get fucked, Dungeon Lord. We ain't staying, unless you're willing to make us. Go ahead. Prove how good you are. Kill us.
Three men stepped forth, armed with shovels and sickles. They weren't Barova's best, and definitely not fighters. They had meager attributes, skills unsuited for combat. If a fight broke out, Ed knew he and the spiders would win before he even bothered to rein his drones. Winning wasn't the issue, though. He tossed the last of Karmic's knives at the feet of the nearest farmer.
Cut your friends free before they hurt themselves.
He nodded to the 10 webbed shapes.
Go back to your tents. Be reasonable. This is a fight you cannot win.
Goddamn. Why do I feel so cold? He wondered.
He had as many layers of clothing on as he could while still being able to move.
It would be so easy. Smack one or two around, make them see sense that way, beat it into them.
Maybe we ain't feeling like reasoning with you, arsehole,
the farmer snapped. He was clutching his sickle so hard that his knuckles were white, and his hands were trembling ever so slightly.
He's scared of me.
For the faintest instant, he saw himself as the villager saw him. A gaunt man, armed to the teeth, whose eyes could set alight with evil flame at will. A man who surrounded himself with monsters, and whose word was law to them. And he held these people's lives in his hands.
Do you wish for us to web them down, my lord?
One of the spider warriors asked hopefully.
A bite or two, perhaps, and they won't struggle for a long while.
No, Ed said, feeling the anger draining out of him. Not yet. We won't be the ones throwing the first punch.
The farmer tightened his grip on the sickle and took a tentative step forward, past Ed's knife. The spiders hissed at him, and he stopped. He looked back.
Go on,
the woman egged him on.
Don't be a coward. Everyone has your back.
Like we had their back,
the farmer asked her, pointing at the 10 webbed villagers with his sickle. The tension was so thick that Ed could have cut it with his short sword. Maybe he would need to. Then an excited laugh erupted behind him.
Lord Wright, it seems like your villagers' insurrection has been cut short, said Kaga.
His gaze was past Ed, toward the line of trees, up and past the valley. The Kaftar had drawn his scimitar. He craned his neck one way and the other and stretched.
What are you talking about? Ed asked.
Something in Kaga's attitude made him forget all about the escape attempt. He followed the Kaftar's gaze.
Oh my God. What's going on?
Fearful whispers spread among the villagers like wildfire. The pleading from their webbed friends increased in urgency. At first, Ed saw nothing, only the shadows of the forest as nightfall approached. The sway of the wind on the leaves and branches, the faint howling of a distant wolf,
We have company, Kaga said simply.
Then Ed saw them. Shadows, he thought at first. A mirage of the moonlight over the sea of grass. But the way those shadows floated, their shape, they were human silhouettes. There were so many of them, floating a few feet from the ground,